Okay, we're beginning on the bottom of Samach Aleph Amud Bet, by the Mishnah says, Shiva Smanim Ma'avirim Alaketem. There are seven ingredients, cleansers, detergents that you're going to put on a ketem. We'll see in the Gemara what the purpose of doing this is. Although we already saw in yesterday's daf that this is a way to determine whether the ketem actually is from dam or from something else, or a way to eliminate the possibility that the ketem is still there in the beged. So the ingredients are the following. Rok tafel. The Mishnah itself will explain what this is. It's saliva, mei grisin, umei raglayim. I'm going to leave those three because the Mishnah in a second will describe each one of those three. Veneter, which is natron, and likely is a sodium bicarbonate that was used in the cleansing process. Burit, which is lye, and the Gemara itself will discuss what they think that is. Kamonia is not clear what that is. There is some Rishonim that indicate that it was an asev. It was some sort of vegetation that they dried out and they crushed up to use. The Aruch, on the other hand, says that it is Simolian earth, this earth or dirt that comes from the island Simolia. And then Vashlag, which again the Gemara will discuss, and it's very unclear what that is, although some translate it as lion's leaf. Hit below, if they put the beged into the mikveh, Vasal Gabav Teorot, and then after that they worked with Tarot with this beged, Hivir Alav Shiva Smanim, if then they use these seven ingredients to cleanse it, Velo Avar, and it doesn't disappear, Harezet Seva, then it is dye and not a ketem, not dam. We'll have to discuss when we get to the Gemara how foolproof this is, or what is meant by the Mishnah as to why you need it vila, as well as the cleansing through the Shiva Simamanim. Hatarot Teorot, once you've now determined that it's not a ketem, but rather dye, then the Teorot that you work with are clearly Teorot, because there's no ketem here anymore. Veinu tzarich latvil. You don't need to do any additional tvila. Avar oshadiha. If by cleansing it with the seven ingredients, it disappears completely or fades significantly, ketem. That's an indication that it was dam. But tarot tmeot. In that case, the tarot that you worked on before you did the cleansing are problematic because the tefillah didn't help because the ketem was still in the beged. It's arich ladbil. And therefore you have to do another tefillah in order to take care of the ketem. Ezo rok tafel. What is this saliva that is without taste, without flavor? Kosh lo tam klum. If you didn't eat anything, it's saliva in the mouth of an individual who has yet to eat or drink anything, who has been fasting, usually good to do overnight, because then you get the purest saliva, and it's not mitigated or weakened by the food substances that are eaten. Megri sin, the waters of the beans. Leisat grisin, it is chewed up, grits shel pol, made of beans, chalukat nefesh, that have separated away from their shell. And the way that the Oruch and the Groh explained it over here is that chalukat nefesh means that it's separated on its own. The bean itself, in the process of growing, broke out of its shell, cracked out of its shell. And therefore, it's the grits of a shelled bean that you have chewed on. And so the combination of the saliva and the materials of the bean make it that you have now some sort of pasty ingredient that then you use as a cleanser. Mei raglayim, urine, shechmitzu, that have reached the point where they're ready fermenting, which means that they've been around at least for 3 days, and they're starting to go bad, as they say, but really means that they're starting to ferment, because then they're more potent in their ability to be a cleanser. Tzarich, the kaskes, shalosh pe'amim, l'kol echad ve'echad. Each one of these ingredients requires that you rub it in 3 times, the way that you rub a beged one side on the other, the way they did laundry in their day, by rubbing the beged against itself. So you need to use each of these ingredients and rub it 3 times on the beged. Shelo kisidran, eviran shelo kisidran. If you processed this, cleansed it, not in the order that the Mishnah lists of the 7 ingredients, oshevir shivas manim kachat, or you did it simultaneously, you mixed all the ingredients together, lo asav lo klum, you haven't accomplished anything at all. Question as to why lo asa v'lo klum, wouldn't it have been enough to say v'lo asa klum, that it didn't do anything? So some want to indicate that that's a stronger language of the Mishnah, that really addresses two issues. One is that it doesn't work. Whatever we said now doesn't work at all. But only does it not work, it also is not a negative, which means that if you go to do the process again, it will be effective. And it's not as if you put some of the ingredients on, or you put them out of order, or you do them all at once, that somehow that has faded whatever was there, and then the next time you go to do it, it won't be effective. We don't worry about whatever you did beforehand, and it's as if you didn't do anything at all. So that might be why the duplicate lashon of the Mishnah. Tana. So now we have the explanation of neter, which is this natron. It has to be neter alexandrit, lo neter antaprit. Alexandrit means from Alexandria of Mitzrayim. Antaprit was an Antipatrian, which was a city that Herod built in Yehuda B'Shomron in honor of his father, in memory of his father, was named after his father. The difference between the neter that's found in Alexandria and the neter of Antaprit is not just because of the location, but actually the way that they extracted it. In Alexandria of Mitzrayim, it was actually mined from the ground, and which the sodium bicarbonate was mined from the ground. On the other hand, in Antaprit, they used to create it from drying out and crushing vegetation that had sodium bicarbonate in it. So it was a different strength of sodium bicarbonate, and therefore they say to favor the one from Alexandria, because that one is mined from the ground and is a either purer or better, more concentrated type of sodium bicarbonate, which is known as a cleanser, because when the water is added, it causes the sodium to separate away from the carbonate, and then that helps to release fats or take off fats, stains of fats or grease from clothing. Burit. So now, what is this burit? Amar Rav Yehuda, ze ohala. That is ohala, which loosely translated is aloe, although in this case, it's not clear that that's what's meant over here, whether it's this type of aloe or a different species of aloe than we think of. V'atanya burit v'ohal. Don't we have a braita that says that there's an ingredient called burit and an ingredient called ohal, which would mean that they're two separate entities and not the same thing. Elamai. So what are you going to suggest? Burit is kavrita. So you're going to say that burit really means kavrita, which is sulfur. Vermini. Is that really true? Osifu alehen. They added on top of that halavitzin, which was I didn't recognize the word. Vale onin, which is wormwood. Haborit, which is what we're looking for, Val. So again, here you have the borit and all, first of all, that are separate entities. And then the braita seemingly is speaking about the issues of shvi'it. And it says here that they added these items to the list of items that are problematic on shvi'it. Viborit kavrita. If borit is really sulfur, mi'ile shvi'it. Why does it have any relevance to shvi'it? Ratanya, we have a braita, zeklau. The principle is kosheishlo ikar, yeshlo shvi'it. Anything that has, it's not clear what the word ikar is. Tosafot says that sometimes the Gemara translates ikar, like in Avodah Zarah, to mean that it's in the ground during the summer and the winter, meaning that it's not something that is an annual, it's something that's a perennial and stays around. Tosafot does not love that explanation over here because things like wheat or grains, which are clearly subject to shvi'it, don't stay in the ground from year to year. And so that can't be the explanation over here, but rather he favors Rashi's explanation over here, which is Shoresh Shivimenu Chai. It has some sort of central either root or trunk from which it draws its sustenance. And the problem is that Gafrit or Kavrita, which is being described over here, is mined from the ground or taken out of the ground. It's not a living entity. It's not something that you would subject to Shvi'it. And so that doesn't make sense that the borit is kavrita. Elamai borit ahala. Well, you're going to say, go back to your original assumption and say that borit is ahala. Vatanya haborit va'ol. We already challenged that from the fact that there is a braita that puts them as separate entities. It says, tre gavne ahala. There are two different types of ahala, which might explain the difference that we spoke about now, which is that what Allah is used sometimes to mean aloe, but over here it might be a reference to a different type of plant, the crystalline ice plant, which might have been what they were thinking of or had in mind in terms of what it is, rather than the aloe that we think of that's used to as a cream or a salve for burns. what's interesting here is Tosafot discusses the Gemara in Shabbat that has a slightly different girsa, which is that it says a burit v'achol. It has it as sand and not as ohal. If you do that, then it actually makes the Gemara a little more sense, because then the Gemara started with burit v'achol, started out with that, and then rejects it. And then it comes around and says that it's burit v'ahal, and it changes it to ohal. The reason he favors that is because the Gemara here doesn't say Ela li olam. Ela li olam would indicate that we're going back to a previous position that we took. Before they said it was Borit was Ohal. And now we're coming back to it. So wouldn't you say Ela li olam? We're going back to what we said before. That the Gemara doesn't say over here. It just says Ela. Ela is a rejection of the previous statements, and now we're introducing something new. But we didn't introduce anything new over here. It's Borit and Ola, which is what we saw before. That was the explanation of the Gemara. So Tosafot says it's possible that that might indicate that that girsa in the Gemara in Shabbat that has the first section discussing Borit and Chol might be a good way to explain the Gemara here, that it's Borit B'chol, then they try Borit Kavrita, and then they go to Borit Ohala. So there are actually three different suggestions in the Gemara, rather than the Gemara returning to the original suggestion. And then he says, well, if that's the case, the Gemara in Shabbat rejects it because they have the Braita that says Borit and Chol. Why doesn't the Gemara answer like it does here? Trei gavnei dechol. There are two different types of sand. Just like the answer over here, there are two different types of ohala. But Tosafot says they must have had it mesorah. They must have known that there wasn't such a concept of two different types of sand or chol, but ohala does have different species. Kamonia, Amar Rav Yehuda, shlof dots. It's a very difficult statement. Again, we don't exactly know what kamonia is. It either is some sort of vegetation that is dried and then crushed up, or it's this white earth that comes from the island of Kamonia, which is the way that the Oroch explains it. But now the Gemara says about it that it's shalof, which means to pull out, and dots means to stick in. So it's very unclear. Rashi here doesn't comment about it at all, but it either is the method of extraction, which is that you stick it in and then you pull it out. That's how you extract whatever it is that you're trying to extract. Or it's a description of the action that you take in order to crush it. But otherwise, it's not clear whether this is describing the process of extraction, the process of making it, or it's the nickname that was given to this item because of the way that it was either extracted or the way that people interacted with it. Vashlag, Amar Shmuel, Shaltinu l'nechute yama, I asked the seafarers, Bramru, Ashlaga Shemei, that its name is Ashlaga, Umishtakach bene nikve marganita. It is found, the literal translation over here is between the cracks or crevices of a pearl, but it might likely be a reference to the shell in which the pearl is contained, that the crevices of that shell, or from that shell, you can get it out. Umafkele beramsa de parzala. And you get it with a iron needle, or really an iron nail, as Rashi says over here. You have to take a nail, and using the nail, either you crack it or you scrape off whatever it is you need from this item. So whether they're describing the opening of the clamshell in which the pearl is found, whether they're saying you have to split the pearl in order to get it, or you have to do something with the shell in order to get it, but it's some sort of ingredient that comes out of the sea that is associated with the marganita, with the pearl. In modern Hebrew, ashlag is potash, but from the description of the Gemara over here, it does not sound like we're talking about potash over here because of the way that they say that they extract it from the sea and the way that they suggest that it's being extracted over here. Now, we move on to the part of the Mishnah, which is the more halakhically oriented part of the Mishnah, which is hid below vasa. If you put it into the mikveh and then you do the process of cleansing this item with the seven ingredients, we said over there that after that, it's fine. Over here, there's basically three approaches in the Rishonim as to why it is that this works, that when you put in the mikveh and then you do the test and you find out that it is dye and not dam, why does the Mishnah say that you are successful at removing whatever is there? And then the tarot that you work with are tehorim. So Rashi, not here, but Rashi in Sanhedrin, when he discusses this, says that this test is binary. And the test is absolutely effective. Which means that if it is dye, then the seven ingredients here will not remove it. And you have definitive proof that it is dye. On the other hand, if you do the test and it takes it out, it's no longer there, then you have definitive proof that it was dam. And that's why over here, when you do the test and afterwards you find out that it's seva because it didn't disappear, then you know that you have seva and not dam. On the other hand, if it was dam, it would have been affected. And if it is affected, then you know you have dam. And that's the Mishnah is discussing here, the two different possibilities. One possibility is that you discovered that it was dai, and then what are the ramifications of that? And the other possibility is that you discover that it's dam, and what are the ramifications of that? But the test is binary and absolute. The problem with that is, then why do you need the tevila beforehand if you are going to determine afterwards that it's seva? If you determine that it's dai, then there was never a ketem here. There was never any problem over here. So why did you have to put it in the mikveh before you did the test? What's the need for that? So some of the achronim try to come to the defense of Rashi over here, but many of the rishonim disagree with Rashi's approach, and we'll see a number of places in the Gemara where they indicate otherwise. And Rashi over here also seems to be of a similar mind, which is that it's not absolute in its ability to test whether it's dam or blood. It just shifts the probabilities to a much higher probability that if it's this outcome, it is dye. If it's this outcome, it's likely blood. And that's the reasoning behind what is done here. So then the Balei Tosafot bring two other possibilities of how to explain it. There's a Tosafot here, I'm doing it here, but it's really a Tosafot that's written on the Mishnah to explain the issue of why you need a tevila over here. So one of the explanations of the Balei Tosafot is that the combination of the laundering or washing of the item, which fades it down, and the fact that it's tuma blu'a, which we'll see again on the second half of today's daf, it's tuma that is not exposed, it's not external, it's now been internalized to the beged. And since it's tuma blu'a is tahora, that's exactly what you're doing to this beged. The beged beforehand had a stain on it, but the stain was partly on the surface, partly external. It has a marking on the beged. It's clear. It's visible. Once you launder it with these seven simanim, you make it or fade it to the point where now it's only internal. Since it's internal, even if it's not seva, because that's not an absolute certainty, because even if it doesn't disappear, doesn't mean that it's not dam. We've just eliminated the likelihood that it's dam, but there still is a possibility that it's dam. The reason you don't have to worry about it if it's dam is because you've now made it balua. You've now changed it from being a surface or external type of tumah to an internal tumah in the beged. And since you now have the question as to whether it was dam or tseva, plus the fact that you've now made it into tumah balua, that's what makes it that at this point, whatever you did is tahor and the tarot that you dealt with were fine. The need for the tevila is because before you got to that point where it was tumah balua, it was at one point moist, and at one point it was a ketem that was not blu'a. Because of that, the beged could be tameh from the original ketem that came into contact with it. And that's the requirement for the tevila. The tevila is to eliminate the tumah that was there before it dried up and before it was laundered. That's what the tevila takes care of. The laundering then renders it into something that's balu'a, and therefore you don't have to worry about it anymore. That's one way that Tosafot explains it. The other way that Tosafot explains it is that you have a sveika here. Every ketem has an embedded safek in it. And that is this dam nida? Or is this dam mialma? Is this some sort of stain that came from external to the woman or is contributed by some other factor? So you always have that safek whenever you deal with a ketem as to whether it is a stain of dam or is it a stain that is from some other factor. Then on top of that, we now add an additional layer of safek, which is now that you've laundered it and it didn't disappear, the probability goes up that it really is dye and not dam. And so now you've created a sfeik. The first sfeik is this dye or is this dam? The laundering makes you favor heavily that now it's dye and not dam. Even if you say it is dam, the dam doesn't necessarily mean that it's dam nida. It could be dam nida or it could be dam from an animal. It could be dam from a cut. It could be dam from any other source. So therefore you have a sveik. But we know that sveik by ketem is not enough. Sveik, we've seen all through the Masechta, we've discussed this numerous times, that when it comes to the discharge of dam from a woman, even in the face of a sveik, we are machmir to say that the woman is tmeah, or rechoshesh that the woman is tmeah, despite the sveik sveika, and that is because overwhelming probabilities of dam that is found on a woman, either through discharge or through a ketem, likely came from the woman herself, and is likely a menstrual discharge. That's probably the overwhelming evidence. Because of that, even in the face of sveik sveika, generally we would say you are tmeah. So over here, you have to add an additional factor, which is what the Balei Tosfot would say over here, which is bitul, which is the laundering of this item makes it that it is batel. It no longer exists. And Tosfot phrases it this way. Says, mi umitam sveik sveika lachud, lo ye mitarinen le. If it was just the sveik sveika, we wouldn't say this ketem is tahor. Ilav taima de bitul. Had it not been for the fact that you're now mevatel it, as we explained, that normally women have sightings of dam from their body, and if you find a stain, the most likely scenario is that it was discharged from her body, and that's where the dam came from. So Tosfot says the third explanation here is that the reason that you are making this dam tahor is not because you're certain when you launder it and it stays there that it's dye, because that's not true. It moves the needle towards saying that it's dye, but it's not absolute. What it does open up is a sveik sveika. But the sveik sveika by itself, as Tosfot says, is not enough to make it that you would assume that it's tahor. You have to add on top of that bitul. How do you create the bitul? By laundering it with these seven ingredients, you have now rendered it batel because you've faded it, you've washed it to the maximum point that you can, that makes it that it's no longer something that you would worry about, or something that you are concerned with because you did the maximum that you could to remove that ketem from the beget. And given that, you have now bitul combined with sveik sveika. So Tosfot says sveik sveika by itself would not be enough. And he also notes, and this is important, that bitul is not enough. And that's what he says before. How come we have to launder it in order for it to no longer be classified as a ketem? Just say the person's not makpid on it. He doesn't care about it. And then he's mevatel it. That should be sufficient. Why do I need the additional aspect of laundering it in order to make it into a bitul? And that Tosfot says is because that bitul by itself is not enough, because the simamanim and the ingredients and the cleansing over here is only a good enough process to prospectively remove the tuma. But limafreya, the tuma that was there retroactively or up until this point, doesn't go away. And so bitul uchud would not help you, because the lack of hakpada is only a prospective help in terms of removing the tumah. It does not have the ability to remove the tumah limafreya, the retroactive tumah, or the tumah that existed until this point in time. So he says you need the combination of bitul and sveik sveika together. That combination allows you to remove the tumah from here. But then he goes back to the original question that we asked on Rashi. Why do you need tevila then? If in the end you have sveik sveika and bitul combined together, then that should eliminate the tuma prospectively, retroactively. Why do I need a tevila at all? And he says, v'yesh lamar, that he, kishinit yavesh, habeged nit batel, that when the ketim dries into the beged, it's batel, but v'odolach lo nit batel. But it was still moist, there's no bitul here. U'v'odolach nagabo habeged. And when it was still moist, the beged came into contact with it, and because of that, he has to give it a tevilah. So again, similar to what he said in the other answer that we said from the Balei Tosafot, which is that there was a point in time where this ketem was problematic because of the fact that it was moist. It's only now that it's dried out that allows you to be mevatel it through the cleansing process and add that to a sveik sveika. That's what allows you to make it tahor prospectively and even lemafreya, even retroactively. But it can only go retroactively back to the point where it dried into the beged. When it was moist on the beged, then it conveyed tuma to the beged, and that has nothing to do with your mindset or the bitul or the sveik sveika, because none of that existed until you laundered it and until it was dried out. So those are the three different approaches to the Gemara over here. The Aruch Maner says there's actually a nafkamina, a big nafkamina, between these different understandings, which is Rashi claims in Sanhedrin that this is an absolute test, and if it doesn't fade, then it's for sure die. That means that this has implications not only for Tarot, but even to be matir the woman, the Bala. She could be together with her husband now because once you know it's a die for certain, then there's no Domni Da here and she's Torah the Gamre. So it's enough of a test to make it that we will allow her to be together with her husband and we'd be matir Tarot. On the other hand, for the Balei Tosafot, the two explanations we gave, either because it's Tuma Blua, and therefore it's Batel, or because it's a Sfeik Sfeika combined with Bittel, and then you're just using overwhelming evidence to say for Tarot that it's not Tamei. But that doesn't mean that she's really Torah and she's Muteret the Bala, because we're not absolutely certain. And that uncertainty will make us tell her, go to the mikveh, keep the Tumat Nida, to be sure that you are Torah, and that you can't go back to your husband. So that's the way the Orach Daner describes the Nafkamina between your understanding of this Gemara as well as how you explain the upcoming Gemara. There are those that want to suggest that that Nafkamina is not a strong Nafkamina, because we've seen before in the Gemara that many times that we are Mekil, the Gabe Bala, even though we're Machmir, the Gabe Taharot. And we've seen that earlier in the Masechta, that even like Tuma, Lemafreya, and certain other aspects only apply to Taharot. They don't necessarily apply to Bi'ila or Bi'ah, to the husband. And we've given different explanations as to why that is true. But nevertheless, you could separate between the two items. But the Aruch Daner just makes that suggestion. That would be a Nafkamina between these different understandings of why in the Mishnah, Bi'it Bilo, Vasagabab Taharot, what is happening in the Mishnah over here. Tarabanan, Vira Lav, Shivas Manim, Velo Avar. If he put on the seven ingredients like our Mishnah said, and it did not dissipate, it did not remove the stain. So now we're assuming then that makes it likely positive that it is dye, according to Rashi, absolutely so. Or according to Tosfot, it either gets you the point of Tuma Blua, or makes it Batel together with the Sfeik Sfeika. But then, Tzafon Ve Avar. And then they used, Rashi says over here, you can see Tzafon Sabon, or Savon in Old French, which is soap. They use some sort of soap or very powerful ingredient, and it is able to remove it. So there is this savon, which seems to be an ingredient either that is harder to find, or even with the ingredient, it needs a lot more working, and it has some sort of potency that can remove it, even in the face of the seven smanim being unable to remove it. So then, tarotav tmeot. Then his tarot are problematic, because that seems to be an indication that it really was dam and not seva. Because if it was seva, it seems to be that it would have withstood even the cleansing of the tzafon. Whereas if it was dam, that's what removed it. Mara says, tzafon, seva, nami, ma'avar. What do you mean? Tzafon is so powerful, it's so potent, that it also removes dye. So given that, just the fact that after you had done the seven smanim and the stain was still there, now that it goes away, that's not an indication that it's definitely dam. That could be just as good an indication that it's dye, because the tzafon has that ability. Ella, it has to be, this is the statement from the Braita. Hevir alav shisha smanim, velo avar. He put six of the ingredients on it, and nothing changed. Hevir alav tzafon, and then instead of putting a seventh ingredient, he put the tzafon on it, ve'avar, and he was successful. Tarotav tmeot. Then his tarot or tmeot, because had he put the seventh ingredient on, maybe it would have made the difference. It's circumstantial evidence that had he just continued with the process, he would have been successful. The Balei Tosafot say, what is the chiddush over here? The Mishnah says that you got to do all seven of them. If you don't do all seven of them, there's no indicative proof from that. So of course, if you only did six and nothing happened, and then he puts the soap on and it works, that seems to be indicative of the fact that it was dam, or that it would have possibly gone away had he put the seventh one there. So what Tosafot suggests is that the chiddush here is that he put the six ingredients on, and it didn't change, it didn't budge an inch. The thing was the same color when he started and afterwards. So then you would have thought, just putting on the seventh ingredient is not going to make the difference. And therefore you already have evidence of the fact that this is definitely dye and not dam, because had it been dam, you would have begun to see a process of fading all the way along. And the absence of the seventh ingredient should have just been the final touch that gets rid of it. It shouldn't have been something that does everything. The brightest chiddush is, that's not true. Even if you did six and nothing happened, the seventh one could be the one that marks the difference. It does the makiv patish, it does everything, together with all that was done before, but it does everything to fade it. Therefore, when you put the tzafon on and all of a sudden it disappears, now you have to be worried that possibly it was dam, and had you done the seventh ingredient, it would have worked. So that's how Tosafot explains the chiddush over here. Tanya idach, we have another braita. Hevir alav shivas manim, used the seven ingredients, velo avar, and nothing happened. Shanan, you did it again, vavar, and then it disappeared. Tarotav Tehorot. Then the Tarot that you did were Tehorot because it doesn't make a difference that you did it a second time and it disappeared. Because when you did it the first time, it was still there. The first time that you did it and being still there was indicative, according to Rashi, that it was 100% it's dye and not dam. Whereas for the Balei Tosafot, the two explanations, it means that you've now opened up the high likelihood or high probability that it is not dam, the sveiko together with the bittel, or the possibility that it is bittel together with tuma blua. And so those make it that we don't worry about it. That's only true of the tarot that were done between the first cleansing and the second cleansing. But the tarot that were done after the second cleansing, tarotav tmeot, then his tarot are problematic. He was makpid on it, and it left, and it disappeared. So we might ask a question on this in a second. But just to understand, and this is the way Rashi explains it over here, the Balei Tosafot explains it slightly differently, but Rashi says over here, when he did the cleansing process again, he made it clear that it matters to him if there's a safek dam that's left over here. So, yes, the first test was successful at determining that this is dye and not dam. The fact that he went back to cleanse it again shows that he thinks that it might still be dumb. And since he thinks it might still be dumb, he now opens up the possibility of this test being influential on what the outcome is over here. And therefore, when he comes along and wanders it again, thinking that it might still be dumb, and then it disappears, the test is giving him a positive outcome, which is that it disappeared now, and then he's confirming the fact that it probably was dumb. So his hakpada makes it that you got a positive outcome from the test. That's indicative of the fact that it was dumb. So that's the way Rashi reads it. And again, Rashi is difficult here, and this is what pushes some of the Rishonim against Rashi's earlier interpretation, which we saw from the Gemara and Sanhedrin, which is that if the test is absolute and binary, then after the first test, and it didn't fade, then it was dye. And it doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter what you are worried about, it's dye. And if it's dye, it's dye, there's nothing to discuss. According to the other views of the Rishonim, where we brought the two of them from the Balei Tosafot, but other Rishonim like the Ran, the Ramban, all discuss these and favor one of those two explanations of the Balei Tosafot, then you have a reason to say that his considerations about what this is does have influence over here. Because when he says after the first laundering, now you've lowered the probabilities, but if he still continues to believe it's dumb, then he's reopened the Pandora's box by saying, you know what? Even though we've lowered the probabilities, I still think it's dam. And for Tosafot, the Shita Dam says that the whole reason that it's classified here as not being Tamei Tumat Dam is because it's Tumat Blu'a inside of the Beged. Now when you change your mind and you're going to try to take it out and cleanse it and launder it again, you're actually changing it from Tumat Blu'a to the possibility that it now might actually be released by the Beged. And that's what makes it Tamei now going forward, is the fact that you are reawakening this Tuma Blua, because now you want to get it out of the Beged. And then when he does the new test and it comes up positive, that's going to be influential over here. That's the way that the other Rishonim favor not like that explanation of Rashi that the test is absolute. Samale Rabbi Abba the Ravashi Mide Bikveda Talya Milta. Rabbi Abba says to Ravashi, I don't understand. What does it have to do with the person's intention? It should be just determined by the objective standards, which are, did it disappear from the Beged, or did it not disappear from the Beged? And even if you launder it again, why should that matter? According to Rashi, Rabbi Yada's question is, if the first test determined that it was already dye, there's nothing to discuss once you get to the second test. What does it have to do with what he's thinking? You've already made a determination by the first test. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot say that this is a fundamental machloke between Rabbi Yada and Ravashi as to what determines whether something is Tumah Blu'ah or not. Is it the objective facts that make it into Tumah Blu'ah? Or is it what you're thinking that makes it into Tumah Blu'ah? And that's why Rabbi Yada rejects this view of how can it be that the person determines Tumah Blu'ah? It's factual objective. Is it Blu'ah or is it not Blu'ah? That's the only thing that should matter over here. Or in essence, he says, your intentions are not influential over whether the test is effective or not effective. The fact that you repeat the test should have no implications over here. So Amalei in, Ravashi says back to him, yes, Peda is influential. The Tanya, Rabbi Chiya Omer, Dama Nida Vadai. This isn't a ketem, but rather a discharge from a woman that we know for sure is menstrual dam. Marvelav Zayin Smanim Umevatlo. Then you can use the same 7 ingredients and be mevatelet. And if you do cleanse it with that, the stain that remains or whatever is left over is no longer mitameh. V'amai, why should that be? Ha dam nidau. Why does it matter if you've cleansed it and you've washed it if we know for certain it is dam nida? Because then you have eliminated what the Balei Tosafot said before. That is a sfek sfeika that has vitol associated with here. Here there's no sfek sfeika. Here we know for sure that it is dam nida and it is vitol. That's what makes the Ramban favor the other view of the Balei Tosafot. Because over here, what does this question or what does this proof have anything to do with our case of ketem? Our case of ketem is a sfek sfeika. The case of the dam nida is a case of no safek at all. We know that it's dam nida. So that's what makes him favor the other view of the Balei Tosafot, that we're dealing with bitul and tuma blua. And that's exactly what you have here. You have dam nida, that is now inside of a beged. You run the ingredients, you cleanse it with the ingredients, you've now been mevatelet, because you've put it through a washing or cleansing process that eliminates it, and whatever's left is tuma blua. But what you see here is alma b'kpeda talya milta. You can see from that breita that kpeda is the key element because the bitul, by doing the laundering, is what eliminates the tumah from the beged. So you see that your intentions or what you think about the stain is influential. Hachanami kpeda talya milta. So to in our case, when you launder it again, that shows that you weren't really mevatel it in the first cleansing, and because you've now reawakened the ketem in a sense. And that's how the other Rishonim explain this. Not like Rashi, that your kpeda makes it that you're reintroducing a test, but rather your kpeda makes it that the bitul that you did before is not effective. And they view the question from the Braita as being focused, centralized around the word umivatlo, which seems to mean that the individual is the one who is mivatelet. It's not the objective process that does it. And given that, so too over here, the person's relationship or view of the beget has influence over the status of the item vis-a-vis the beged, whether it's tumah blua, whether it's considered to be dam or not dam. All of that is influenced by the kpeda of the individual. Tosafot does ask over here, if it's kpeda talya milta, then why do you need to wander it? Why don't you just say the guy is mivato libelibo, and that's enough. So Tosafot says, v'yesh lomar t'betela t'atoi tzolkol adam. In that case, we don't accept his bitul, because most people are makpid on something like this. And therefore, he's an outlier in this case. And the fact that he wants to be mevatel, it doesn't matter. It's only together with the laundering process where most people would be mevatel it, that that bitul is meaningful. It's not otom. We have a Mishnah. Charasin shenishtaresh bahem zav. If you have shards of pottery that were used to hold liquids of a zav, shibalu mashkim, they absorbed whatever liquids the zav discharged, v'naflu l'avir atanur, and then they fall into a oven that's made out of kli cheres. Kli cheres oven is mekabel tuma mi aviro. Anything that's in the airspace of the oven is effective. Vihusaka tanur. And then they fire up the oven. For instance, if this cheres was used before as a urinal, and therefore now it's absorbed the urine of the zav, and then when it's going to be fired up in the oven, it's going to leach that urine from it. Hatanur tameh. In that case, the tanur is tameh. Shesof mashke latzeit. Because when it comes to shards of pottery that have absorbed liquid, whenever they're subjected to heat, the liquid starts to leach out of the charasit, and therefore there's going to be, for sure, liquid in the oven. So now, the reason that it is in charasim or in shards of pottery is because, generally, when you heat up shards of pottery, the pottery itself does not disintegrate, but rather leaches the liquid out. If you were speaking about wood, if you were speaking about other materials, the same time that the liquids are coming out, at that moment, the wood itself is being consumed. So it never really leaves the wood. It's consumed together with the wood. And that really would depend on what type of wood you're speaking about. If you're speaking about moist wood, that would not be true. It would take time to burn it, and therefore the liquids would leach out before it's burnt. Whereas it's dry wood, where it would be consumed at the same time as the liquids. So it might be that other materials that show similar features to charasit would have the same din. But basically what you have here is these charasim that are exuding liquid inside of an oven, which is kabel tumami aviro, and therefore it's metame the oven. Amresh lakish, loshanu ala mashkim kalim. That's only true by lighter forms of mashkim. Of a mashkim chamurim, tame afapish lo usaka tanur. There they would be metame the tanur, even if they did not exit yet, if they were not heated up, and they did not exit the charesit. Now, the understanding of tuma kala and mashkim kalim, mashkim chamurim, goes back to what we saw earlier in the Masechta, that there are certain things that are called mayanot hazav, mayanot anida, mayanot hazava. Those are things that pool before they are discharged, and they can be reabsorbed into the body. Those are considered to be mayanot. For instance, saliva, urine, those have a din of av hatuma. They're a very high level of tuma. They're the only liquids that have av hatuma. Any other liquid, the fact that it can be mitamei kelim is a din derabbanan, not a din d'oraita. Those liquids, for instance, are milk from a woman who's a zava, or blood from a zav. These are liquids that come out of them, but are not liquids that are inherently tamei. They are tamei because they came into contact with the individual who was tamei, and that makes them a rishon the tuma. But midrabanan, they're re-elevated to an ava tuma, it can affect the kli. So those, Reish Lakish makes a distinction and says, the tuma kala, or those lighter forms of liquids that only are rishon the tuma, that are mitamei midrabanan, they actually have to leave the charesit in order to make the oven tamei. Then the mayanot hazav, whereby they are ava tuma, they don't even have to leave the charesit. The fact that they're embedded in the charesit in the oven is enough to make it that they are mitamei, because since they have the potential to leave this kli cheres, that's enough to make it that it's not classified any longer as tuma blua, when you're dealing with this higher level of tuma with regards to mashkim. And these items are, in essence, are not considered to be bluim, and were mekel by other mashkim, because they're only dinei derabonon. Yochan Amar, echad mashkim kalim, echad mashkim chamurim, umusaka tenor in ilolo. Yochanan says, tuma blua never is mitameh. You need it to get out of the charesit for it to be effective at making the tanur tameh. Be a difference whether it's tameh midoraita or tameh midorabanan. Otherwise, there's no distinction in the requirement for it to leave the charesit in order to be mitameh the tanur. So the fundamental machloket then between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is whether an item that can come out with difficulty is considered to be blua or not. Reish Lakish says it's not blua, which is mekel by mashkim kalim. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan says that's considered to be blua, because it doesn't come out easily, and until it comes out, it will be considered blua. Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan the Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish's position here. It's below vasag abav ta'arot, our mishnah, where he took it to the mikveh, then he did ta'arot, vevir alav zayin smanim, and then afterwards he cleansed it with the seven ingredients, below avar, and it did not disappear. That's considered to be dye, the ta'arotav ta'arot. Then his tarot are considered to be tahor, vein tzarich lebil, and you don't have to do another tzvilah. As Rashi says here, v'afilu lo avar, even if the ketem itself never disappears, it is batel and tahor, because a person's not makpid on it. So there you see that even though after the cleansing process, the ketem is still there, and it's absorbed into the beget, and even though there is a possibility of getting this out, if you use a phone, if you use this other cleansing agent or detergent, you could get it out. Despite that, we still say it's classified as tuma blua, as long as it's still absorbed and cannot come out easily. Even by mashkim chamurim, which here we're speaking about, even a ketem dam hanida, we still assume that it is tuma blua. So you see, like Rabbi Yochanan, that it's enough that it is embedded and it's difficult to come out for it to be classified as tuma blua. For Reish Lakish, the fact that there's a possibility of getting it out of the beget should be enough of a reason to say that it is tameh. So then Reish Lakish says back to him, that's not true, because this is an unusual case, which is anach l'ktamim derabanan. All the din of ktamim is a din derabanan. Midoraita ktamim don't affect the individual. We're already dealing at a level derabanan. At a level derabanan, then I agree with you, you can say that tuma blua doesn't matter if it's a mashke chamur, a mashke kal. Over there, unless it comes out, it's not going to be mitameh. And since this is deeply embedded in the beged, it's no longer problematic. Where it says, Va'atani Rabbi Chiya. Wait a minute, that's great for our Mishnah. But what about the bright that we brought from Rabbi Chiya that said, Dam nida vadai? When you know for sure it's dam nida. And you mavir lav zayin smanim uvatlo. We just brought that bright from Rabbi Chiya that this works. Even when you know it's absolutely dam nida. So you can't say anymore that it's tamim, it's even by real dam nida, we make the same determination. Amalei, Rabbi lo shana, Rabbi Chiya menolei. Rabbi Chiya is a Talmud Muvak of Rabbi. If we don't find such a statement in the Mishnah, how does Rabbi Chiya have a braita that tells us something that's not found in a Mishnah? Now this is a difficult statement because throughout Shas, the Gemara brings braitot from Rabbi Shaya and from Rabbi Chiya, who are the Talmidim of Rabbi, who are the Misadrei ha-braitot. And we bring braitot all the time to question the position of an Amora. Why don't you say in all those instances, well, it's not in the Mishnah, I don't have to worry about it because it's a braita. And if it wasn't in the Mishnah, then how did Rabbi Chiya get it? That would be the answer to any question that you bring from a braita, from Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya. We don't see that in the Gemara. So the Rishonim here have different approaches to dealing with it. The Balei HaTosafot over here quote the Gemara of Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan, whereby Ilfa says, after he had traveled away and they made Rabbi Yochanan into the Rosh Yeshiva, because Ilfa had gone out to make a parnosa and he came back, he climbs up the mast of the ship and he says, give me any braita, and I'll show you a source word in the Mishnah, and if not, I'll fall off of this mast, this tall pole over here. So he put himself in that position, saying that he could find a source for any braita of Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Shaya, in the Mishnayot of Rabbi. And so then, what the Balei Tosafot suggests over here, is that Ilfa indicates that most of, or the majority of braitot of Rabbi Chiya, can be found in the Mishnah, or can find a source in the Mishnah. There happens to be one exception to that rule, where we can't find that, but absent that, we would assume that the braita has some source in the Mishnah, even though you can't find it, or you can't think of it, because Ilfa was able to do that, even though nobody else really could figure it out. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is to suggest the difference between a braita that's brought Rabbi Chiya that quotes someone else, versus a braita of Rabbi Chiya. So if a braita that quotes someone else, then it's fine. Rabbi Chiya is bringing a braita, that doesn't have to be in the Mishnah, because it's being quoted by a different Tana. But if he's quoting something from himself, like this braita over here, which is Tani Rabbi Chiya, this is Rabbi Chiya's own position in the braita, that is problematic if we can't find it in the Mishnah. Because Rabbi Chiya is a Talmud of Rabbi, how does he have a Masorah absent Rabbi? And if it's not in the Mishnah, how does he have it in the Braita? So that might also another way to explain that distinction as to why we challenge it here and not in other places. Okay, Eitbei Rabbi Yochanan the Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan again challenges Reish Lakish. Revi'it Dam, Shenivla Babayit. You have a Revi'it Dam, which is sufficient Dam to make you Tamei, B'magab, Masa, and B'ohel, that got absorbed into the house. Habayit Tameh. The house is Tameh. V'amri la, Habayit Tahor. We have another braita that says that the Bayit is Tahor. Velo plige. They don't argue. Depends on, in the time sequence, when this happened. Habakelim dimikara. Habakelim dimisof. The kelim that were there when the blood first spilled in the house, they are Tameim because their Vietnam was actually there. B'mamashut. It was physically there. The kelim that are there, after the dam already gets absorbed into the house or into the ground, at that point the house is tahor, or the kelim that are in there are tahorim, because the dam now is tuma blua. Nivla'a biksut. If the blood got absorbed into clothing, imit kabeset v'yotzei mimenu revi'it dam, if when you launder it, it spills out a revi'it worth of dam, tmeya, then indeed you have a problem here. Im lav, if not, Tehorah, it's fine. So over here, even though you have a full revi'it of dam that was absorbed into the beged, and obviously revi'it dam in amet is a high level of tumah, it's tumat amet, which is avat tumah, despite the fact that it is a high level of tumah, when it's absorbed in the beged, then we don't consider it to be tamei, or to able to join, or be mashlim, the revi'it dam. If you had a full revi'it dam, it would be mitamei, maga, masai, and ohel. It's not a revi'it dam, it's not mitamei. So now, if you have a beged that definitely has a revi'it dam that was absorbed into it, the test that Gemara says is, you launder it, and then you measure the liquids. Rashi says, you measure the liquids that went in, you measure the liquids that come out, and if there's an additional revi'it when it came out, now you know you have a revi'it dam. Only in that case will it be mitamei. Absent that, it won't be mitamei. But we know a revi'it dam went into this beged, and there's still some dam left in this beged. And given that, it makes it that the tuma is tuma blua. And according to you, Reish Lakish, if it's tuma chamura, that's blua, we look at it as if it's out. We look at it as if it's out. That should be able to join the remainder of the dam that now came out easily with the laundry, which means that it's not balua, and it should all be mitzarefit to give you a revi. The fact that we're not mitzarefit shows you that this is Tuma blua, and it is not considered to be as if it's there, even in high levels of tuma. Now that's the test that Rashi says. The Baalei HaTosafot don't love Rashi's test because they say if you put in an amount of water and then you have a full revi'it that comes out afterwards, that is evidence of the fact that a revi'it dam came out. But sometimes, even if you have less than a revi'it additional, you still get a revi'it dam out. That's because when you launder the beged, some of the water gets absorbed into the beged, and in its place is released some of the dam. So you could have a possibility where you don't have a revi'it additional, yet you still have a revi'it dam that came out of the beged. So Tosafot says that the test you do is that you launder the beged, and then after it comes out, you see the level of liquid that you have, you fill up a revi'it dam, and then add water to get to the same level, and then you look at the color, and you see, is the color similar? The color of a revi'it dam mixed with water, and whatever you took out of this beged, do they have the same color? If they have the same color, then you're clear that a revi'it dam exited the beged because it has the same shade of red at this point. If there was less than a revi'it dam that exited, then the one that has the revi'it dam will be a darker red or have more reddish tint to it, and therefore it would not be a revi'it dam. So that's how Tosafot says you conduct the test. Tosafot says Rashi's test is too chamor, because again, this idea that some of the water could have stayed in the beged and still released the revi'it dam. So you don't need an additional revi'it, you just need to know if a revi'it was released. So again, this is problematic for Reish Lakish. Amrav Kana Mikulei Reviot Shanukan. This is actually a kula in Reviot Dam, because Shiny Dam Tvusa Derabanan. This is Dam Tvusa, which is only problematic Midorabanan, not Midoraita. Dam Tvusa is Dam that exits the body at the time of death. For instance, somebody was murdered. In the process of being murdered, they bleed before they die, and then they bleed after they die. The blood then is pulled together, some of it from before they died, some of it after they died. They're dying from their injury or from their wound. And so the wound released dam while the person was still alive. That dam does not have tumat amet. The dam that comes out after the death does have tumat amet. But now they're pulled together. And that is, midoraita, there is no tuma over there because the dam of the mate and the dam of the chai are mixed. And therefore it's not considered to be a dam and a mate. The rabbonan assigned tuma even to Dam Tvusa, because of the Chashash, that maybe there is a revi'it dam of the mate there, and therefore they said, even when it's not, we're going to assume that it is, and they make it Tameh, but that makes it into a Din D'Rabbanan. And a Din D'Rabbanan, like what we said before, Reish Lakish says, that my rules of Tuma Blua only apply to high levels of Tuma in Dinei D'Oraita. Tameh that are D'Rabbanan, this Dam Tvusa that's D'Rabbanan, both of those are only rabbinic in nature, and therefore Tuma D'Rabbanan, if it's blua, we're not going to worry about it, even if it's a Tuma Chamura. The mixture of the Chai and the Maid, it's not clear when the threshold is met that makes it into Dam Tvusa, that's D'Rabbanan. Does it have to be a full Revi'it of Dam HaMeit? Or does it have to be that the road of the Revi'it is Dam HaMeit? That's for the Safek and Midrabbanan, it's Mitameh. Tosafot points out here that according to Reish Lakish, it will turn out that by Tumot D'Rabbanan, that you would say they at the Chak, they are considered to be Bluim. Like Reish Lakish said by Dam Tvusa, that since it's D'Rabbanan, we're able to say that it's classified as Dam Blua. And Tosafot says, well then why not in our Mishnah not say the same thing? Why don't you say the fact that it is a Din D'Rabbanan of Ketem, and now you've done the seven Simamanim. So now it's Tuma Blua that can only come out of Yidei Dachak by using Tzafon. Why don't we say that it is Tahor because it's Tuma Blua? Why does the Mishnah say Harizet Seva? Why does it have to prove that it's a dye? Even if it's Dam, it should be fine because now it's Tuma Blua that only is Yotzei Yidei Dachak and it's a Din D'Rabbanan. And by Dinei D'Rabbanan, Reish Lakish says we are Mekyo. So the Baalei HaTosafot say that is true that we are Mekyo by Dinei D'Rabbanan. That's only Dinei D'Rabbanan where there's a Safek Shakul, where there is a 50-50 shot of something being the case. Whereas by the case of Ketem, we still believe that the overwhelming evidence is that the woman is citing Dam Nida, and therefore by Ketem, we're not going to be Mekyo like a regular Safek D'Rabbanan, and that's why the Mishnah needs to indicate that putting the Simamanim on and seeing that there's still a stain there is indicative of it being Tseva, which then opens up the other, either Sfekot, or adds the bittel to the blua that makes it that it is considered to be tahor. Eighth way, Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan. So now we reverse the tables, and Reish Lakish challenges Rabbi Yochanan. Kol balua sheino yecholat seit tahor. Any balua that can't come out is tahor. Ha yecholat seit Tamei afagavdolo nofik. If it has the potential to come out, even though it didn't come out, that's enough to make it tamei. That's supportive of Reish Lakish's contention that when you have tumah chamura embedded in something, the mere potential for it to come out is enough to make it tamei. You don't actually have to have it come out. By tumah kala, it actually has to come out. But by tumah chamura, it doesn't have to come out. It sounds exactly like what Reish Lakish is saying. Amar Rapapa, so Rapapa says, narrows the machloket now in order to avoid all these questions that we raised until now. Any time where it does not have the ability to come out, and he doesn't care about it, he doesn't matter to him that it's baloa, that it's absorbed into the beged, he's not trying to remove it, he's not trying to do anything with it. Dibriya kol tahor. Everybody believes it's tahor there because it won't come out, and he doesn't care about it. If it has the ability to be exuded, taken out of the beged, and you care about it, you're upset that it's in there or the stain is bothering you, then divya kol tamei. Everybody agrees it's a tamei, even though it has yet to exit the beged. Because of the fact that it can't exit the beged, and it's bothering you, we look at it as if it has exited the beged, and that would be the explanation of the breita we just brought over here, because even Rabbi Yochanan in that case agrees that we look at it as if it's already exited. Kiplege, their machloket is, the yachol atzeit v'lo ikpid alav. It's a case where it can come out, it has the possibility of being discharged from this beged, but you don't care about it. It doesn't bother you. Mar sabar kem yachol atzeit apagav d'lo ikpid alav. Reish Lakish believes that since it can come out, even though you don't care about it, that's enough of a reason to deem it as if it is out already, and therefore it is mitameh, at least with tumah chamura. Mar sabar apagav d'yachol atzeit, even though it can come out, im hikpid alav, in. If he's makpid on it, then we look at it as if discharged, as if removed. Ilolo. If not, not. So you need both of them. So the question is in that middle case where it can come out, but you're not makpid on it, which way do we lean? Do we lean towards the fact that it can come out? That's enough to make it tamei? Or do we lean the side that you're not makpid on it, and therefore it doesn't matter that it can come out, you don't care about it, it's as if it is batel. That's Rabbi Yochanan's view. Whereas Reish Lakish believes that the mere fact that it could come out is enough reason to make it tamei, even though it has yet to come out. It actually turned out the maskana now that Rabbi Yochanan is similar to the shita of Rabbi Ashi, that it is dependent on the person's kpeda, and that Reish Lakish is similar to Rabbi Abba, which is that there's an objective mitziu. And that's why that bright of Rabbi Chia is pivotal, because it supports that shita of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Ashi, whereas Rabbi Abba and Reish Lakish need to dismiss it and say that that bright of Rabbi Chia is mishubeshet, because we don't see anything similar in the Mishnah, and that everything is objective and has nothing to do with the person's kpedo. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Samach Gimel Amud Aleph.